हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिः 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 ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 125, Chapter 63. Sri Rudra continued, I, Lord Brahma, the other demigods, and the pure-minded sages have all surrendered wholeheartedly unto you, our dearmost self and Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, this insignificant person does not worship you, even though we who are perfect worship you, meaning, you know, Banasura. By not worshiping you, he destroys himself. I and Brahma, who have attained the highest positions by accepting to be guna avatars, devarshis, vibhuda, brahmarshis, munaya, and atmaramas, whose hearts are clean, are affixed in Brahman, take shelter of you with complete conviction, and worship you, since you are the root, surupa, atmanam, dearmost of all, and the Lord. Right, so those who are actually intelligent, they surrender to the Lord. They take, while Banasura, even though he's so qualified, you know, being able to do his kshatriya duties, he's so powerful, he can do so many things. You know, he's such a nice devotee of Shiva, but he hasn't actually appreciated what's the position. Sri Rudra continued, let us worship you, the Supreme Lord, to be freed from material life. You are the maintainer of the universe and the cause of its creation and demise. Equipoised and perfectly at peace, you are the true friend, self, and worshipable Lord. You are one without a second, the shelter of all the worlds and all souls. The BBT purport mentions. Srila Sridhar Swami states that the Lord is a true friend because he sets one's proper intelligence into motion if one desires to know the truth about God and the soul. Srila Jiva Goswami, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti both emphasize that the term bhava pavargaya indicates the highest liberation of pure love of Godhead, characterized by unalloyed devotional service unto the Lord. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti also explains that the Supreme Lord is samam, perfectly objective and balanced, whereas other living entities, having an incomplete grasp of reality, cannot be perfectly objective. Those who surrender unto you, or enter unto the Lord, also become fully objective by taking shelter of a supreme consciousness. Right? So objectivity comes in that it's not about ourselves, then it has to be about something else. Right, the modern concept of objectivity is that it's not so-called not about us. It's just about knowledge itself. But then the problem is because they're using their mind according to their own application. Then they're going to use their own impressions on a particular body of knowledge, on whether it's valuable or not. So because of that, that is technically not going to be objective. So no conditioned soul can actually be objective. Yes?
So it means that unless we become fully Krishna conscious, we are not objective.
When we see something connected to Krishna, then that's objectivity. So we may be objective in one area, in another area, not so objective. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like at lunch we might be objective, but at breakfast we might be more subjective. You know, so.
My point is that when we judge, not from the point of judgmental, but you have to act, so you have to judge.
Yeah.
How people act, what the motive, and
yes, all that's there. So as we see, the process is here. Now, if the information is coming in from the mind, right, from the manas, then it comes to the second position of the chitta. So at the consciousness there, the mind, because we're meaning mind with a particular consciousness. So that means there's a particular way you view things. So then that knowledge will be taken, and then accessing the memory, then we'll try to reduce it down to one thing, and then from that reduction, then we can create a samskara. We can create an impression. Because otherwise, unless we can categorize it, how do we say what's going to be our impression? Now, once we do that, now that it's been reduced down, now we'll start to expand it. And what are the various combinations and permutations you can make with that? So that's called reasoning, right? And then we'll come to the next, but from that, then we have to choose something. Once we've done that part, but that choosing will be again based on our identity. Right? Then what we've chosen, that will be then affected by the senses. Now, if we see ourselves as servant of Krishna, that means our choices are going to be about Krishna. If we see ourselves as servants of Krishna, then that means our impressions, then we'll see them in connection with Krishna. So the more that's situated on pure devotion, then the better the quality that it will be. But that is connected at all, even just ultimately back to Krishna, it still gives a spiritual effect. But because we're attached to the secondary form that we're using to express that, then the actions or reactions of that then give us happiness or distress. Does that make sense? Because within bliss is concluded happiness and distress. In other words, happiness and stress are forms that bliss takes. Does that make sense? So we take it that happiness is the extra goal. No, actually bliss is the natural thing. So that absorption in that love for Krishna can take the form of happiness or distress. Like Mother just showed his love for Krishna, then when he's coming back from the cowherd field, or when he wakes him up in the morning, feeding him, and then that takes that happiness. When he's going out to the forest and all those with the cowherd boys, then there'll be distress. But it's all based on that love. So does that make sense? So we get too much attracted by the secondary aspect. So even the happiness and distress are secondary. So we wonder, why do we have it? Because that's where we focus. We don't focus back behind that to actually the ananda. Because ananda is not happiness or distress. So, yeah.
Just on the word objective, it's like, in a sense, it's twisted from the original meaning of the words. Because the word objective is taken as like impartial.
Yes, it's taken as impartial.
In the original sense, it once meant it's aimed at a certain object.
Yes, it's aimed at an object. Yes. So, subjective is yourself, objective is another. But the point is because it's not about, they take it that relationships are subjective because it's about yourself.
Yeah.
So on the material platform, you could say in one sense it is, but at least culturally that it's objective means it's about someone else, then it's good.
Oh, like that, okay.
Yeah. You know, so then it's more pious. But actually, when that the object is Krishna, he's the ultimate object. So whatever object you're seeing, if you're seeing it in relationship to bringing that to the ultimate object of Krishna, then that's actually objective.
Yeah.
Right? Does that make sense?
General sense is like impersonal.
Yes, that's the whole thing, is all these, they become changed according to what modes people are in. You know, like you objectify, you turn it into an object, but the point is that means that the secondary attributes are appreciated, not the primary.
Yeah.
Like that. So then, in this way, then it gets used in many ways, but it doesn't have its natural form, is that everything, anywhere you apply the substance, means that's an object. But then why do you apply that? It's because it's ultimately to please Krishna, is the supreme object. So all objects are used in the service of the supreme object. Then it works. That's objective. Yes, but like you say, it's neutral. It's the modern. They say it's neutral, but the point is you have to, means when you make the decision, you're going to make a samskara according to what you can do with it. And what are you going to do with it? Right? It means in academic, it means you're going to have to use it for your field. Right? But now, have we defined that the field itself is objective? Why do we have the field? What's chemistry for? What's the, you know, this? So then, Then you have the thing, and then when they're going to make the choice after the reasoning process, then they're going to have to use their identity. They're academic, I'm in this, so even though this may seem logical, no one in the community will buy it, so I'll use this one because this is what people will appreciate. You know? Just like I remember discussing something and I was pointing out that I forget who's with them. I think it said before Svoboda and some another one. They're PhDs, but they choose to use their position to establish the Vedic version. And so I was talking this to a devotee academic and just pointing out they do this, and so they get, you know, an effect like this, or our friend Forbidden Archaeology, Vruta Karma, yeah, like that. They're academics, and they use it in that way. But this devotee academic, you know, who is able to function in the mainstream, he says, "Yeah, but they're not accepted by the mainstream, and so we can't use them as an example." So it's like, so being accepted by the mainstream, but I'm accepted by the mainstream, but I can have no effect on the mainstream, because if I have an effect, I won't be accepted. And my whole point is to be accepted by the mainstream. Therefore, that is perfect Krishna consciousness. You know, it's like, you know, okay, and then we're accepted by the politicians, we're accepted by the celebrities, we're accepted by our neighbor. So therefore, fitting in is the ultimate goal of life. And that's totally subjective, because each individual wants to fit in a different way. Like the people that one person wants to fit in with, you know, someone else would not want to fit in with them. You know what I'm saying? So the whole thing is that, well, then what's the point? You know, what's the point? Then all it is a job, and if it's not making you money, if you're an academic accepted, and you don't make money, then what's the point? Okay, you're accepted by them. Great, nice, you know. You know what I'm saying? You're accepted by people that people don't even know who they are. So that means 7 billion of people on the planet don't neither know who you are or the people who accept you are. And somehow or another, that's fabulous. Yeah, so therefore, that's why then we use the terms according to how the acharyas give them. We know how they're being used in the modern context, and that's why we don't appreciate it. Because they're misapplying, because objective means it's about the object. So what's the object? What is the object? What's the purpose? And you can say, well, it's about whatever my field, but the point is, yeah, that's the object, but what's the purpose of that? So if it doesn't go back to the supreme object, then it's not actually objective. Because there's another purpose in studying the objects. There's a subjective need in studying those objects. So all it is intellectual object subjectivity rather than, you know, I say, obviously sentimental subjectivity. So that's superior. You know, because karma, jnana is superior to karma from that aspect. You know, of just the detachment. So they have a seeming detachment, so it's better than an obvious attachment. But it's still attachment. There's no real objectivity, because if otherwise, why can't they make things work? Other than economically. That's why, like, let's say Tapaloka. That's all intellectuals. Do we see any material facilities developing there? No, they all walk around in the copas. That's it. There's nothing. Nothing there. Right? So that's the point. Modern science would be just an intellectual thing if it wasn't for businessmen and politicians. Right?
If it wasn't for money, they would also walk in copas.
Yeah, they would also be walking around in copas. Yes. Yeah, so Einstein, he has 5 of the same color copas. You know, like that. You know, so that's the thing. Right? Okay. Those who surrender the Lord also become fully objective by taking shelter of His supreme consciousness. So, taking shelter of Krishna, His consciousness, that makes you objective. Rudra concluded, "This Banasura is my friend and faithful follower. I have awarded him freedom from fear. Therefore, my Lord, please grant him your mercy, just as you showed mercy to Prahlad, the Lord of the demons." Srila Sanatana Goswami explains, Bana is a friend, Ishtaha, a dear one, Priya, and a follower. A friend has affection with conditions, and a dear one has affection with no conditions. Or, he is dear, Ishtaha, because he is a friend, Dayita, and servant. Or, he is a dear friend, Ishtaha, Dayita, and a dear servant, Ishta Anuvarti. Therefore, I give him fearlessness, right? Because of his closeness. That's the whole point, because he has that surrender to Krishna, that closeness. Therefore, then, he's asking that based on that condition, then he's, you know, in other words, he's a friend of a friend. Oh, my Lord, Deva, whatever is mine is yours. Since he is a devotee of your devotee, you should be more merciful to him than to me. Therefore, great mercy should be given to him in the form of no fear, tat, or what mercy should be given. Therefore, tat, mercy similar to that given to Prahlad should be given. Make him the best devotee. Or be merciful because he, mercy, was similarly given to the Lord of the demons more than to me. Or do not think of me in giving him mercy. Think of Prahlad. Give mercy just as you gave to Prahlad. Right? So many different angles are there that he's meaning when he's speaking these things. So these will all be brought out by the words that's here, how he presents them, and everything like this. Verses 46 to 53. Lord Krishna satisfied Lord Shiva's request and returns to Dwarka. The Supreme Lord said, "My dear Lord, for your pleasure, we must certainly do what you have requested to us. I fully agree with your conclusion." The BBT purport mentions, "We should not think it strange that the Supreme Lord Krishna, here addresses Lord Shiva as Bhagavan, Lord, but in small. All living beings are part and parcel of Lord, qualitatively one with him. And Lord Shiva is especially powerful, is an especially powerful, pure entity who possesses many of the Supreme Lord's qualities, just as a father is happy to share his riches with a beloved son. So the Supreme Lord happily invests pure living beings with some of his potency and opulence. And just as a father proudly and happily observes the good qualities of his children, Lord is also happy to glorify the pure living entities who are powerful in Krishna consciousness. Thus the Supreme Lord is pleased to glorify Lord Shiva by addressing him as Bhagavan," right? Because then he's accepting him in this position. So that way, he's saying, because of the closeness of Banasura to myself, you please accept him, because I'm your servant, he's my servant, that makes him your servant. And so then he's accepting this through as the servant of Shiva, that Shiva is dear, therefore in this way then mercy goes to Banasura. Yes?
It sounds a little strange that Shiva is begging Krishna to forgive his friend and apparently disciple, but he wouldn't preach to Banasura for some reasons, that you're doing nonsense and all. Why didn't he tell?
Because he, as the lord of ignorance, then that makes him the lord of those who are in ignorance. And so he gives shelter to them, that at least then they're following progressively the path, that they behave properly, they do things properly, like that. So from that aspect, then he may be instructed. But as far as he said before, that he's mentioned to him about the Supreme Lord, but he doesn't take it. That's his unfortunate. So then the emphasis will just be on what the relationship is. You know, like Balaram and Duryodhana, then they basically just talk about club fighting. And that's where he's a disciple, that's where there's the surrender, so that appreciation. But outside of that, how he runs his kingdom and that doesn't come up in the discussion. So it's just the relationship is very specific.
But I'm obviously thinking of our own relationship with our own friends. And then we have, like you mentioned, specific relationship.
So you work within that?
So it's good enough. We don't touch.
You don't have to. It means if there's opportunity that can go beyond that, it means you're Krishna conscious when you're involved in these activities. But whether they're being Krishna conscious in that or not, if it's not disturbing the relationship, then it doesn't need to come up. If it naturally can come up, then you bring it. But if not, you just leave it at that, because you're being Krishna conscious. So at least then there's Krishna conscious association. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the difference between the kinds of friends. You have those who are equals, those who are senior, those who are junior, and those who are confidential. So confidential friends, then there may be more discussion of what you're feeling, how you're thinking, this and that. You know? But even if not, it can function within the form that you're using. It may be confidential discussion within the area of relationship. But, you know what I'm saying? Let's say you have another... You're managing, someone else is the manager, so you discuss management and how it affects you and how you feel and how, you know, how do you get through all these difficult things, and when this comes up, then what do you do? So it is confidential and it is service to Krishna, but you're discussing the secondary aspect of it, and it's up to them to apply it in the primary. You're applying it in the primary, but you're discussing the secondary because that's the basis of the relationship. Then they apply it in the primary is there. Now, if they ask, now you can, of course, discuss. But if they don't, you know, or if you're bringing it up, no, but if you're Krishna here, no, but we're talking about just the, you know, the nuts and bolts management here. Then you don't bring it up anymore. Why bring up Krishna if they're not interested? Because ultimately they're doing the service for Krishna, so it does get to that point. So they're only able to see the result connected to Krishna, but the knowledge and the process, that's their own. So they're working on the platform of renunciation. So on the platform of sannyas, you can discuss more. But on the platform of renunciation, it's just the renouncing part and the technical process that they're using that they claim is their own. These you can discuss. But seeing that as not theirs, but as Krishna's, that you just don't bring up. I remember one gentleman went go to his house, and he loved to talk about Chaitanya Charitamrita. So why we went is music. He was a musician. And so then, but he loved reading Chaitanya Charitamrita. You'd bring him prasad, he'd love it, and all this and that. And I'd been visiting him for different things for a long time. You know, maybe, I'm not sure how long. But then, you know, because he was talking, you know, is you know, pleasantly moving and more things about Krishna. And then, and he was an avid reader of Chaitanya Charitamrita. But then one day he mentioned about coming to Mayapur and this and that. And he knows that, you know, everything's vegetarian there. So, you know, he has no problem with that. He'll come, he'll see this and that. Because he brought up, I used it as an opportunity to bring up something about the advantage of vegetarian. As soon as I brought that up, immediately he was not interested. You know, like that. It's just, he didn't want to go there. So, you know, he's Bengali, he lives his Bengali lifestyle, you know, whatever that includes. But he's added Chaitanya Charitamrita and all these things to it. So it's just, you know, it's just a... So you don't discuss there. Because if you push on that, then he won't want to talk anymore or interact. But you, the others, then he's engaged in service. Does that make sense? So you just work in the area that of least resistance.
We take this particular example of Shivaji and Banasura, because Shivaji, he's a superior and Banasura is junior person to him. So that relationship, many devotees, they're not sure whether the, you know, the senior persons, if they don't correct the nonsense of the juniors, is a fall goes to them as well.
I mean, Shiva did end up getting chased away from the battlefield. You know, it means, in other words, if you're going, I think Shukracharya makes that point, is that, you know, he came and he's the guru of the demons, but that still doesn't mean he doesn't get trouble. So he gets so much trouble that he wouldn't get if he was in the heavenly planets, because he's with the demons and they don't know how to behave. So many times they insult him and ignore him and deal badly with him. And so when that happens, he just has to lament that, you know, he's chosen this, so that's what comes along with it. So you're dealing with that. That's why Shiva's dealing. He's a great devotee, so that aspect, they are purified, they are uplifted. But until they come to understand the devotional aspect, they won't cross into bhakti. They may elevate themselves in piety, you know, from the platform of ignorance. But the point is it won't go to bhakti until they make that connection. When they do that, then it moves on. You know, just like you see so many from local backgrounds, they may be, you know, coming from Vaishnava background, Shaiva background, Shakta background, you know, just regular Hindu Bindu, Kichri, Mushmash background, whatever. But the point is that they take an interest in Krishna consciousness, they take it up. And you see, is they still have nice relations with the family and all, because they're doing the same thing that they'd always do, but now it's focused on Krishna. So there's not, as far as lifestyle goes, there's not a conflict. You know, it's just you don't necessarily bring up the philosophy if, you know, your uncle or grandfather isn't interested, right? You know.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And they are very happy. And they are very happy with the lifestyle.
Yeah, they're happy. Because, yeah, you know, when Iron and Iyengar become devotees, then they're happy with what goes on, right? You know. But it's just, you don't bring up about who's supreme or something.
Is Shukracharya actually a demon, or is he just...
No, he's a demigod, just because he doesn't have a good relationship with Brihaspati. So Brihaspati is the guru of the demigods, so then therefore he goes and becomes the guru of the demons. So, you know, they're in equal positions. But he gets grief for it. No? Okay. The Supreme Lord concluded, "I will not kill this demoniac son of Vairochani, for I gave Prahlad Maharaj the benediction I would not kill any of his descendants. It was to subdue Banasura's false pride that I severed his arms. And I slew his mighty army because it had become a burden upon the earth." Right? Because Shiva's Ganas, he didn't kill them. He just chased them away. Right? He did such an attack on them that they got afraid and just ran off. And Shiva, then he just sent a yawning weapon and just, he went to sleep. So he didn't affect Shiva's side because he's a devotee and they're just following him. But Bana then, you know, his pride is there because of his thousand arms, and, you know, his army that he's amassed through that pride is a burden on the earth. So that he removed. This demon, who still has four arms, will be immune to old age and death, and he will serve as one of your principal attendants. Thus he will have nothing to fear on any account. Right? So he'll be established nicely in serving Lord Shiva, and this way he's getting good association and that. So that way, considering his line of Prahlad Maharaj, because that's what Lord Shiva said, you don't consider him giving mercy, or don't consider his connection with me giving mercy, at least consider his connection with Prahlad Maharaj, or like Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj is a demon, he's a demon, so therefore, in that way. And so then he considered. And then he left him with four arms, so he's special, you know, because he's an attendant of Lord Shiva, and that's therefore the advantage of, you know, he being special, but not so special he's got a thousand arms and has to, you know, go beat mountains into powdered, you know, just because he has nothing else to do.
But Maharaj has a time, not so many people have four arms.
Yeah, so that's why that he'll be special. Even with four arms, you're already special, let alone a thousand. Right? You know, how do you get through doors with a thousand arms? Right? It's like that. That's the problem. That's why he has his palace. And you see, these demons, they stay in their place, because otherwise they can't go anywhere else.
But we said Ravana, he manifested his head.
Yes, like that. But it seems Banasura always had thousands. Yeah, like that. But yeah, Ravana could have just a normal form. He could expand all his heads and all his arms. So he seemed to be more powerful. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, "The Lord gives mercy. Though he is a demon, according to your request, he will be your chief associate. By the Lord's giving freedom from old age and death, the demon became peaceful, even though he was in pain by having his arms cut off. He would have no fear, even of samsara. He would thus be a Jivan Mukta in the future. Attaining the Lord's association, he went to the Lord's abode." Srimad Bhagavatam 11.12.5 mentions that by attaining the Lord's associates, he went to the Lord's abode. So just event it has that step that goes. In other words, you have the aspect is that someone's a demon, Right? And because of that, then they have that connection to the Lord. They get that liberated position, and then from that, then they attain the Lord. So here he attains the association of the Lord's devotees, then the liberation, then attains the Lord's abode. Well, devotees, then they just go from association to the Lord's abode. Like that? Does that make sense? Because otherwise, sometimes you have this, that you have the demons. Does that make sense? Because Jai and Vijay, they go back to Godhead. Right? The merging aspect, that's the demon. Does that make sense?
Mara, did Jai and Vijay go back to Vaikuntha, go to their position, or they go
to... Okay. It means they performed the pastimes here. Mm-hmm. And then after that, then they went down. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus attaining freedom from fear, Banasura offered obeisances to Lord Krishna by touching his head to the ground. Bana then seated Aniruddha and his bride on their chariot and brought them before the Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, thus, or in this way, iti, attaining no fear, the demon, having received Krishna's mercy, offered respects with his head bowed to Krishna, who attracts all hearts, who is Bhagavan, giving mercy to even a demon. He could not offer respects on the ground since blood was flowing from his severed arms. Or he offered respects to Krishna, the form of the highest bliss. Just by offering respects, all pain disappeared and he became a devotee. Then he brought Aniruddha with his bride near to Krishna while bearing many gifts with his head bowed, shirasa. So he becomes a devotee, but he's a devotee in being a devotee of Lord Shiva. Right? So in other words, the Lord's associates, they're actually devotees of Vishnu, but he's their guru. Does that make sense? Then there are those who are devotees of Lord Shiva and not of Lord Vishnu. So that's the demoniac side. So when Rudra is in the what's it? Anantakala, was it? You know, the nice white place?
Mahakalapura.
In Mahakalapura. Then the associates there, they're all transcendental. Right? So all the Ganas and all that we're used to hearing about, they're within the universe. But these are the ones that are outside. They're actually devotees. But their association with Vishnu is through Shiva. And so it has that flavor. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So then now having all that, now he brought Aniruddha with Usha and then you know, and said, and his bride, didn't even mention his daughter. No, it's his bride. Like that. You want to make sure it's like that. Yeah, his bride, yeah. With many gifts, and he bowed his head. Srila Sukadeva Goswami concluded. At the front of the party, Lord Krishna then placed Aniruddha and his bride, both beautifully adorned with fine clothes and ornaments, and surrounded them with a full military division. So he put them in the front, and then put a full military division surrounding them. Right? Thus Lord Krishna took his leave of Lord Shiva and departed. The Lord then entered his capital. The city was lavishly decorated with flags and victory arches. And its avenues and crossways were all sprinkled with water, right? Cities, I mean, not many cities in the world have a victory arch. And if they have one, they're generally known for that. You know, there's only a few of them, right? I mean, you have the one in Paris, like that. India has one, like that. I'm not sure that Germany has one. Berlin has one. Yeah, so there's a few here and there, but they only have one. Here, Dorka has many arches. You know, surrounded with decorated flags and victory arches. Right? So there's so many. Right, you know, that. And its avenues and crossways were all sprinkled with water. As conch shells, anakas, and dundabi drums resounded, the Lord's relatives, the brahmanas and the general populace all came forward to greet him respectfully. Whoever rises early in the morning and remembers Lord Krishna's victory in his battle with Lord Shiva will never experience defeat. Because you're always absorbed in this very nice relationship that Lord Shiva has, devotional relationship with the Lord, how the Lord's very merciful. all these aspects, then where will defeat be? Because if you're absorbed in the Lord and the devotees and the relationship between the Lord and the devotees, what can be defeat? Right? Like that. That's the whole. Srila Jiva Goswami concludes, whoever remembers with face some smaret, Krishna's defeat of Bana and Shiva fighting with Krishna in order to give benefit to Bana will not be defeated. What to speak of hearing and glorifying the events? Right? If you just hear, I mean remember, then you get that benefit. Now, what if on that you're hearing about it, discussing it, like that, that's even more. Simply getting up in the morning without bathing, one can remember this incident. The person will not be defeated by internal or external obstacles to bhakti. Right? Because that's the whole point. That's not about being defeated. It doesn't mean that, you ran out of, toast or something. You know, it's just, it means that nothing will get in the way of bhakti. Nothing can defeat devotion, because that is the glory, that's the victory of the living entity, is that they're always absorbed in Krishna. That's actual victory.
Can we say that, for example, in this chapter there's Palashruti, because this chapter speaks about Anasura, who is kind of demon-like devotee of Shiva, and that's why it gives...
No, but you see other chapters where it's not about, and so and still you get. Yeah. So it's arbitrary? Mm-hmm.
So it's not...
I haven't seen that the acharyas comment on when there's Phalashruti or when there's not. It's just whenever it comes up. Mm-hmm. So there must be traditional things that by remembering these, then all these different aspects of devotional service, like there's so many demons, but then certain ones that are attributed with certain qualities. By remembering those, hearing about those, chanting about those, then those things become removed. Four.
Can we say that Rudra, since he is the head of the Sampradaya, he has a special potency?
Yes, like that. Because he's the head of the Sampradaya. So those who are Vaishnavas, then they post, but there are those who are Shaivites, then even though they're following Shiva, they're not getting the Vaishnav benefit.
Yes.
So they're not in that way in the Shiva Sampradaya.
Yes.
But now it appears from what was said here, Bana now has become part of that line. Well, before he was just a Shaivite.
Yes.
Now he becomes a Vaishnav who follows, in the Shiva Sampradaya. Yeah. So internal or external obstacles to bhakti means what will keep you from being devotional. That's the main thing. If we accept that, then everything goes nice. If we accept that there won't be any distractions or disturbances, then we'll have a difficulty, because we're thinking, why is this happening? It's not working. I took bath in Radhakund and I didn't attain prema. What's going on? Something is this lake plugged in or something? I mean, we need to do something. Hey, who's in charge here? We got to fix this. So that means that there's no obstacles. Means we'll be able to be Krishna conscious. That's the main thing. That's how we should look at it. So that makes sense. So then it has that devotional aspect. It doesn't mean that it can't also include not having problems, but that's up to Krishna. Conclusion. If Krishna gives someone protection, no one can kill him. And if Krishna does not give one protection, no one can save him. Right? So even Banasura, who's so powerful, couldn't save his army. Like that. And at the same time, then Banasura then is not killed. So it's up to Krishna. That's the... Lord Shiva is called Mahadev, the greatest of all the demigods. Although sometimes Lord Brahma is considered the greatest of all the demigods because he can create. However, Lord Shiva can annihilate the creations of Brahma. Still, both Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva act only in one capacity. Lord Brahma can create and Lord Shiva can annihilate, but neither of them can maintain. Because to maintain, you have to be able to provide the ingredients. Right? Okay. Lord Vishnu, however, not only maintains, but creates and annihilates also. Factually, the creation is not affected by Brahma, because Brahma himself is created by Lord Vishnu. Right? So it's just that through him, he does the creation. So Krishna is still doing the creation. Factually, the creation is not... Okay. Factually, the creation is not affected by Brahma, but because Brahma is himself created by Lord Vishnu. And Lord Shiva is created or born of Brahma. The Shivajwara thus understood that without Krishna or Narayan, no one could help him. He therefore rightly took shelter of Lord Krishna and with folded hands began to pray. Right? So Krishna is the one who causes everything to work. And so then, taking shelter of Krishna, then everything goes nicely. If you don't take shelter of Krishna, then it won't go as nicely. Okay, so then, chapter 64 to 72. Okay, chapter 64, the deliverance of King Nriga. 65, Lord Balaram visits Vrindavan. 66, Poundrika, the false Vasudev. 67, Lord Balaram slays Dvidvida Gorilla. 68, the marriage of Samba. 69, Nard Muni visits Lord Krishna's palaces in Dwarka. 70, Lord Krishna's daily activities. 71, the Lord travels to Indraprastha. And 72, the slaying of the demon Jarasandha. Chapter 64, the deliverance of King Nriga. Pratigya, fruit of activities, even if very pious, cannot give us eternal blissful life. Right? So it's very important to note that the pious activities cannot give devotional service. We engage pious activities because they're the best quality ingredient to use. Just like we have a choice to use something of higher grade or lower grade, we use higher grade because it's for Krishna. Right? So, but the ingredient itself doesn't make it bhakti. That's the whole point. Just because I went out and bought some first-class potatoes doesn't make it bhakti. Right? You know, because the potatoes are better. No, it's because I made the endeavor to get better things for Krishna. That's the bhakti. So, yes.
So in that way, if you make an endeavor, like, just say you go to the shop and you really want to get the best ones for Krishna because you want to please Krishna with the best quality, and they're not available, then you get the same amount of devotional credit as if they were there and you got them?
No, but you're going and making the endeavor to do something nice for Krishna.
Yeah, so...
Because this point is the endeavor. It's not... That's my point. It's not the quality of the item.
Yeah.
It's the endeavor. So you're trying to get the best, and if it's not, then you take second best. If that's not there, then you take third best.
Okay, so you don't have to cry if the potatoes are gone.
No. No. Okay. No need of... Yes.
Okay.
But we have to make sure is that that's there, because sometimes we'll think that it's the morality that makes Krishna consciousness. And then especially if we take it into mundane or modern morality, that only if we have that and perceive that way, then that can be devotional service. That's preaching. No. It's a matter of devotional service is devotional service anyway. Then we consider that these go in line with there. And so if the modern morality matches the Vedic morality, then we're comfortable. Right? Because the Vedic morality is very broad. The modern morality is not so broad. They talk about broad, but they're not actually. Right? You know, it's just like, okay, is marijuana legal or not?
Yes.
That's it. It either is or it's not. But in the Vedas, it is, but it's not for everybody. So it can accommodate this wider range. Does that make sense? So that's then how it works, is that if it fits within, then it's used. And if it doesn't fit within, it's not used. You know, it's just like, okay, wearing karmi clothes, then, but why do we dress the way we dress? Because it's the way that a cultured person dresses. So therefore, if you're going to use the not the traditional dress, then you would use clothes that a cultured person would dress in. Right? So it's not about the expensiveness of it, it's how you wear it, what you're wearing. Does that make sense? So in other words, you should be perceived as a cultured person. So that's the connection. Not that, oh, wearing karmic clothes is so much better, this, that. No, it's being cultured is what's better. So if the people that you're dealing with are cultured enough, then you could wear the traditional outfit and they would accept that as cultured. If they're less cultured, right, more narrow-minded people, then you may have to dress in what they would consider cultured. But now if you dress in what neither consider cultured, then I don't understand how that has anything to do with preaching like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that we have to be careful. You have to see what's the connection. But if it's something that's not like, oh, no, we can't fight or we can't anything like that because fighting's bad, then no, but the Vedas do sanction it in certain conditions. So therefore, then we won't say, we won't agree with that. Of course. Now, why would a peaceful situation? Because the Vedas recommend conciliation is considered better than war. Now, four aspects of politics, then sama, dana, beta, and danda, then your sama and danda are going to be the best effect. So in other words, conciliation and war have the best effect. Because you give gifts, you make ultimatums, they may or may not have the effect. Right? So these two are the best. They're effective. Now of the two, then conciliation is better because there's less endeavor, less wastage, less, economically, from all angles it's better. If you can reconcile without having a war, it's better. But if it won't, then war is the next best option. Right? Does that make sense? It's effective. It doesn't mean you don't use the other ones, but that's it. So based on that, that's why we would say the peaceful is better. Not because the modern people say it's better. It's in line with what we do, therefore it's accepted. Does that make sense? Yeah. Chapter 64 summarizes questions and answers. Lord Krishna asked King Riga question 1034 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Question 1034. Who are you, O great fortunate one? Seeing your excellent form, I think you must surely be an exalted demigod. By what past activity were you brought to this condition? It seems you did not deserve such a fate. O good soul, we are eager to know about you, so please inform us about yourself. If, that is, you think this is the proper time and place to tell us. King addresses the questions from verses 10 to 30. Yamaraj asks King Nariga question 1035 of Srimad Bhagavatam from 1064.23. My dear King, do you wish to experience the results of your sins first, or those of your piety first? Indeed, I see no end to the dutiful charity you have performed, or to your consequent enjoyment in the radiant heavenly planets. King Riga addresses the question in verse 24. The rhetorical questions uttered in verse 11 and 26 do not come under this study. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes how Lord Krishna released King Riga from a curse and instructed the royal order on the great danger of taking a Brahmin's property. One day, Samba and other young boys of the Yadava dynasty went to the forest to play. And after playing for a long time, they became very thirsty and began looking for water. Inside a dry well, they found an amazing creature, a huge lizard resembling a hill. The boys felt sorry for it and tried to pull it out. But after several attempts with leather thongs and ropes, they saw they would not be able to rescue the creature. And thus they went to Lord Krishna and told him what had happened. The Lord accompanied them to the well and, extending his left hand, easily lifted the lizard out. By the touch of Lord Krishna's hand, the creature transformed at once into a demigod. Then Lord Krishna asked, "Who are you and how did you assume such a lowly form?" The divine being replied, "My name was King Nriga, son of Ikshvaku, and I was famous for giving charity. Indeed, I gave away countless cows to numerous Brahmins. But on one occasion, a cow belonging to a first-class Brahmana wandered into my herd. Unaware of this, I gave this cow in charity to a different Brahmana. When the cow's previous owner saw the second Brahmin taking his cow away, the first Brahmin claimed that the cow was his and began arguing with the second Brahmin. After quarreling for some time, they approached me, and I implored them to each take 100,000 cows in exchange for that one cow, and to please forgive me for the offense I had unknowingly committed. But neither Brahmana would accept my proposal, and the matter remained unsettled. Shortly thereafter, I died and was taken by the Yamadutas to the court of Yamaraj. Right? He's pious. That doesn't mean that they don't go to Yamaraj's court. It means anybody who's a materialist goes to Yamaraj's court when they die. So if they're pious, they go there nicely, and if they're impious, they go there less nicely. Right? Yeah. Yamaraj asked me which I preferred to do first, suffer the results of my sins or enjoy the results of my pious acts. I decided to suffer my sinful reactions first, and thus I assumed the body of a lizard. After King Nriga had told his story, he offered prayers to Lord Krishna and then mounted a celestial airplane, which transported him to heaven. Lord Krishna then instructed his personal associates, as well as the general masses of people, on the dangers of stealing a Brahmin's property. Finally, the Lord returned to his palace.
Marge, would it be any difference if Nriga chose to first take his piety and enjoyment, and then...
Then he'd have to wait a lot longer before he meets Krishna. So it worked out better. It means materially it's foolish, but spiritually it was good.
But materially we should take the enjoyment first.
But it's not a matter of that. The foolishness... the foolishness is... this is the foolishness. That he's got a very small amount of impiety and a huge, like, unlimited amount of pious. So his idea is if I take the impious now, it's out of the way, and then I'll unlimitedly enjoy, like, forever. That's the foolishness. That he's involved in either, that's not good. So it's not that, no, we should take the good first, then after. It's that the idea that I will enjoy, that's the foolishness. So whatever is, you know, useful in how you say, whatever is useful in Krishna consciousness, that's what we take. So if the impious would be better, we take that. If the pious, but we take that. Otherwise, it's like the two shirts. Whichever one you choose, it's wrong. If you take this, you're a fool, because then afterwards, then you know, you like that, you suffer this, then you'll enjoy, but then it'll run out. If you take the enjoyment, then it'll run out, then you get the suffering. So in any case, you'll end up in the same place. Because he's thinking, oh, that unlimited is actually a value. But still, for the soul, it's just a moment in time. So...
I'm trying to find out what was actually his fault in this. Because maybe...
he's given the cow twice to two Brahmins. Maybe you're only supposed... Yeah, but still you got involved. You know, just because you didn't mean to drop the brick on the person's foot doesn't mean that it hasn't happened.
So he might slap you a bit.
Yeah, so the point is that it may be less than if he had specifically planned. Now, if he gave all the cows to one Brahmin and all that, and then went and took them all back, gave them to another Brahmin, you know, on purpose, and that way then I'm getting so much credit, then the reaction would be much greater.
Yeah.
That, therefore, he just became a lizard here. Yeah. A big lizard, but a lizard. You know, so it's not one of those little tick, 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 tick. Good, good, good. You know, like that. So
we were just talking about the example of potatoes, how it's about the devotion, like it's the endeavor that makes. So here King Nriga was just a pious person.
Yes.
And he made an endeavor and there was a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So he got the reaction. But say he was a devotee and he was doing that charity for Krishna, and you know he made the devotional endeavor, but there was
so that part is accepted, but still the mistake doesn't mean it doesn't get reaction.
But for example, if we enter the shop and we make the endeavor to get the best potatoes, but there's a mistake and the best potatoes are not there, so then
well, what's the mistake?
Wrong shop.
It means
we got to the shop too late or something. I don't know.
Yeah. So the point is then you make the best of there. Then you're determined to be on time next time or go to the right shop.
But will we get some reaction for that?
Why was there a reaction? Because is there something sinful about the not as good potatoes? Here is actually a sinful activity.
Okay.
You know.
Okay, yes. We have a very interesting situation. Yamaraj couldn't judge who is guilty in one story when we have this poisoned brahmanas and this snake whose poison dropped to the boiling, to the food. So we discussed several days ago.
And we discussed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's this old lady who killed
him. Who is guilty?
Yes. Here? Yeah. I discussed.
One of the cantos, I think it's 8 or 7, something.
And Yamaraj couldn't decide who is guilty, whom to punish for the death of brahmanas. And
I mean, what's the point?
Yeah.
So the point is if yeah. you ever run into that problem, then yes, you may be. You have to apply it into situations of yourself. See, to be able to take the most extreme position, find the most extreme example, that means take some intelligence and some background, some knowledge, some worldly experience to be able to do. But it's still not that great because you're not applying it into your own life. What applies to your own life? You know, like I said the other day, it was disgusting. And making the point that, forgiveness is actually the most prominent quality of the devotees because of the nature of friendship. It's the compassion. And so then, so one lady brought up the thing, no, but what happens if, somebody kills my son? And so then how am I going to forgive? It says, are you dealing with that? Is that what we're talking about here? You know, so therefore then, we're not talking about that. We're talking about someone, stood in front of you and danced and put their arms in the way so you couldn't see Lord Nrisingadev. That's what we're talking about. So you have to keep it real to our own situation. Don't try to take it to the extreme to throw it out, because the point is because it's such an extreme, it still establishes the rule. That's the difference in the modern and the Vedic, where you're accepting authority has said this, so the exception to the rule still establishes the rule because it's an exception. It doesn't happen all the time. The rule is what happens. Therefore, the rule is the rule, and the exception, then we deal with that. Sometimes there's a rule on the exception, and then you have to just take it, because how exactly, how did he kill the son? Was it on purpose? Was it not? Was it that, he loved, roller coaster rides, and so he found him the best roller coaster in the world, and for, his birthday, he took him there, and because of it, he had a heart attack and died, and so therefore, you killed my son. There's so many things to do in here, but we make it so simplified for the purpose of removing the rule. In other words, by this example, I don't have to forgive anyone. Because see, in this example, it doesn't apply. But that's the point. In that example, we may or may not discuss it, how it applies. But the point is, everything else it does. So you have to apply it. But that's the thing. We accept authority, then we accept the Vedic method. We don't accept authority, then anything to break authority, then we'll use. We'll use the most extreme example. So that's my point. Why take it that he can work out things for 8,400,000 species of life? Can we do that? No. So therefore, then why put ourselves on the same level as him? You know what I'm saying? In other words, take things that are more relevant to us. If you're taking the principle of it, that you can discuss. But you can't discuss that particular detail because it doesn't apply to us. Right? So in other words, in your duty, you can't, I have two things that I can't quite tell which is what, then what do we do? Now that's something you discuss. So never use the Veda to go against something in the Veda. There is no contradiction. We have to.
What's the actual reason? What's the actual cause of my
That we'll have to see what the acharyas say. Because he got the mercy, I think, of his sons. So by grace of the devotees, then you get Krishna. It's coming up. Stay tuned.
This prayaschit help?
This prayaschit to help? Factually, no. There's an idea that it does, but it doesn't. You know, it's just like, let's say, you've eaten, you're full, but you still have desire. Does eating more actually do anything? And neither fulfills the desire, or the other, just you can't eat anymore, and so you have to give up. You know, so prayaschitta, all it's for is for making people that think prayaschitta work, making them happy. So in other words, it's a crowd pleaser. It's for the general mass. It's not for the intelligent. Like that.
It doesn't fry the seeds.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't do anything. Yes.
Just I find it interesting because most of us, we focus on, you know, why did the Brahmana curse him, but very few of us will probably catch King Riga's response after he's, you know, contained his form again, which is he didn't blame anyone. He just factually said what his mistake was.
Yeah.
And that's actually the focus that we should be having. It's not why this situation happened.
Yeah, how to move forward. Yeah, because we're looking at it so I'll be secure so those things won't happen to me. But it's not about that. It's what I do with it if something happens. Because that's more important. It means you make endeavor through your duties to make arrangements that things don't happen. But it's not about not happening that's important. It's about being Krishna conscious that's important.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premier.